Welcome to the Power of Attorney Project, which is part of our Conversations That Matter podcast. My name is Mary Bart, Chair of Caregiving Matters. This podcast is intended to provide general information only and is not intended to be a substitute for seeking personalized legal, financial, or other advice. This podcast raises issues that our audience can further explore on their own in their own local communities with their own local experts. This project will help to be a call to action for families to solve their issues, find solutions to their problems, and have greater peace of mind.
And today's topic is last rites, the dignity of a good death. And our guest expert is Mark Handelman. Welcome, Mark, and thank you for joining us on this project.
Hello, Mary. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Mark, could you tell us a little bit about your career?
Mary, for the past 15 or so years, I've been involved in issues of individuals who may or may not have the capacity to make their own health care decisions. I've done wills and powers of attorney for people of questionable capacity. I've served as a vice chair and senior lawyer on the Consent and Capacity Board, and I think I've litigated more end-of-life cases than any other lawyer in Canada.
Thank you very much for that. People will take great interest in what you have to say. So when we talk about dignity of a good death, I think that is important that we talk about advance directives. So my first question to you is, what is an advance directive?
Mary, an advance directive can also be called a power of attorney for personal care or an expression of wishes, or there are other names for it as well. But in any event, it's a direction to the people who will be making your health care decisions should you lose the mental ability to make your own. It guides your chosen substitute decision makers in making decisions that reflect your own wishes, values, and beliefs so that the death that you have accords to your own perceptions of what a good death could or should be. It can reflect religious beliefs, it can reflect personal views, it can reflect your own fears and wishes, but it's important to have one so that the people who will make those decisions have that guidance.
Okay, then another question for you. Why do I need an advance directive for personal care?
Well, if you know who will be making your decisions when you can't, and if you are certain that they will make decisions that reflect your own wishes, values, and beliefs, then you really don't need to have any kind of an advance directive, or as they're known in Ontario, a power of attorney for personal care. But the law sets out who makes the decisions, not you when you become incapable. You have the chance to do that in advance. So it's important to have somebody that you not only trust to make a decision that reflects your wishes, but also somebody who will have the strength of mind to advocate on your behalf when those decisions have to be made.
So what happens, Mark, if I don't have an advance directive?
Everywhere in Canada, there is a hierarchy of substitute decision makers. This is provincial legislation, but each province has one. You might end up with your spouse from whom you're separated as your attorney for personal care. You might end up with all three of your children as your attorneys or your substitute decision makers. And if they can't agree on, for example, who should have the cottage for the Labor Day weekend, how are they going to agree on when to pull the plug for mother? So it's important to think about making sure you have the right people who reflect your values and beliefs, but also people who can work together to make these very, very emotional and difficult decisions. And also people who will be able to understand what your doctors have to say about your end-of-life prognosis and be able to ask the important questions to flesh out the information you get from a doctor or from another health practitioner.
So then who do I choose to make my end-of-life decisions?
Well, in my case, for example, I've chosen my spouse, but I've also chosen two of my nephews because they're younger than my wife and I are, so that should she be in the same mental condition I am, I know that there will be other people. But then I've also spoken to my wife and to my nephews so that they, to ensure that they understand my end-of-life wishes and my values and beliefs and won't feel concerned about respecting those values, even should they disagree with what I want in terms of wanting something different for themselves. I think it's hugely important that you choose people who can advocate on your behalf, who will advocate on your behalf, who genuinely care for you, and who know what your wishes, values, and beliefs are.
So in then these are...
Sorry, Mary.
Sorry, folks.
In other words, it's not enough just to choose the right person. It's vital to choose somebody that you can have this conversation with so that they know how you feel about these things.
Well, that's absolutely true. Another question for you. What's the most important information to put into an advanced directive?
You know what? It's a funny thing, but it's not the information in the advance directive, it's the conversation with the person that you appoint to make that decision for you, or the people that you appoint to make those decisions. Really, an advance directive can be very simple. I authorize my wife and my two nephews to make my decisions for me. If you start to add things to that, sometimes people try and read between the lines to figure out what you meant, as opposed to having had those conversations with the people who will make the decisions. As a simple example, many years ago, I had an end-of-life conversation with my own mother, and she said to me, "When there's nobody home, you turn out the lights." Now, that's not a sophisticated medical response, but I knew exactly what she meant by that, and I knew what my marching orders would be should I ever have to make the decision for her. So her power of attorney for personal care had no expression of wishes. It was the conversation from which I gained the authority and the moral strength that I needed if I had to make that kind of a decision.
And those conversations are really hard to do. And most families, I believe, don't like to talk about death and dying. How can people even raise this topic within their families?
Mary, you're right. It's a very difficult topic to raise. And some people are superstitious and don't want to have it. Other people don't want the conversation because it's not a very happy conversation. But there are always times to raise it. Coming home from a funeral, coming home from visiting somebody in the hospital, when somebody starts talking about who's going to get what after they die, even television shows, death appears on television all the time, not infrequently in a hospital. And it's not unreasonable to say to someone you care about, if that was you in that hospital bed and not George Clooney, what decision would you want me to have made for you and why? But however difficult the conversation is, it is vital to empower your decision makers with the confidence and authority to make the decisions that reflect how you want your life to end.
And these conversations are so hard and they're so tricky. So what you're saying is people have to have the courage to even start this conversation. And I know in our family, when my dad had come back from his lawyer with his power of attorney documents and his will, he sat me down and he said, let's go through this. And I said, no, and I left. And then 2 days later, he sat me down at the dining room table again and he said, let's try that again. And he was so smart and so persistent to say, you need to take the time to listen to me. And we went through everything. Mark, we went through it line by line. So he was comfortable with what he had put down and that I would follow it. And it was his persistence that made me step up. And when the time came, I was able to follow his instructions because I remember how hard the first conversation was. We didn't even have it. I just took off. And then I remember that second conversation. And there were many days when I said, thank you, Dad, for having the guts to bring this up and for sitting with me to walk through those documents. And when I took over his care and his financials, that gave me great peace of mind that I was doing the right thing for him. And so these are hard, hard conversations that families have to find ways to make them happen.
Mary, your father was a very wise man. As difficult as the conversation was, not having it could well have left you and your family in a more difficult situation, wondering what the right thing for your father was. Almost all of the end-of-life cases that I've been consulted on or litigated have involved the failure to have those conversations, not only amongst loved ones, but also with your doctors who need to know your values and beliefs so that they can propose treatments that reflect those things. When I do wills and powers of attorneys for my clients, in my view, the most important aspect of that is the end-of-life wishes. Everybody cares what will happen to their estate, to their children, to their grandchildren after they pass away. But what's important to the client is getting from very old to passing away. And so I make my clients promise me that they'll have those end-of-life conversations with their loved ones and with the people that they name as their attorneys for personal care. It is absolutely vital to everybody's peace of mind to have those conversations, not only with the people whose decisions you'll be making, but also with the people who will be making your decisions should that day come as well. And the only certain thing these days in life is it does end.
So true. And I would like to take this opportunity to thank Mark Handelman for sharing his wisdom and his experience with this project. Mark, could you please share your contact information with our audience?
Mary, if somebody wants to contact me, it's m.handelman@simpatico.ca. That's m.handelman@simpatico.ca.
Thank you, Mark, for sharing that information.
I was going to thank you, Mary, for the opportunity to remind people how important these conversations are.
Mary, who are our initial project supporters?
We wish to acknowledge that this project is funded in part by the Government of Canada's New Horizons for Seniors program. Our other initial supporters include Care Connect, the Care Guide, the Healing Cycle Foundation, and Scotia Trust. Caregiving Matters is an internet-based registered Canadian charity dedicated to educating and supporting family caregivers. 90% of our work is done online and by leveraging technologies. 10% is done by producing local educational events. We leverage technologies in everything that we do, ensuring greater reach and sustainability. I trust that we have given you some of the highlights of our exciting new initiative. If you are interested in speaking with me about the project, please let me know. We look forward to your questions and your ideas.
Mary, if listeners have questions, what's the best way for them to contact us?
Well, they can contact me, Mary Bart, Chair of Caregiving Matters. My email is mary@caregivingmatters.ca. Our telephone number is 905-939-2931, and our website is www.caregivingmatters.ca.